The views, opinions and content shared on this podcast are those of the host and guests, drawn from their professional and personal experiences. Please note that there is no single right way to work with or care for curly hair. What works for one person may not work for another, and more than one approach can be valid depending on the experience.
We're here to encourage new ideas, fresh approaches and ways of thinking. Terminology and practices around hair can vary, and we support and encourage the expression and authenticity. When we refer to curls in this podcast, we are speaking inclusively of all textures across the curl and coily spectrum. Welcome back to the Detangled podcast by Avlon. I'm Jackie McIntosh, and as always, I'm joined by Lewis Driver. Today, we're diving into an essential topic for everyone with curly, coily hair, scalp care, and the science behind it. We'll be tackling some common myths and misconceptions, exploring the language around textured hair, and uncovering the truth about scalp health.
That's right, we're going to take a closer look at the science of scalp care, addressing myths around washing, build-up, and product ingredients like sulfates and silicones. We'll also discuss why scalp care is so important and how we can make informed decisions to promote healthier hair and scalps.
Whether you're a stylist or just someone who's passionate about healthy hair, today's episode is all about empowering you with the knowledge to take control of your hair care routine and tackle some of the myths you might have heard along the way.
So I feel like at this point, Jackie, I'm going to grill you a little bit because you are the kind of trichologist. So
I hope I don't disappoint.
No, you won't. So I think what I kind of coined this was like buzzword bingo. So I'm going to jump in there with some buzzwords that often pop up in conversation around hair care. So if we talk about sulfates, what are sulfates and what are their role, or why do people avoid them, I guess?
I think people avoid sulfates because they can be irritants. I mean, in some cases, depending on how you wear your hair, sulfates can be a good thing for you. But, you know, with the kind of ingredients that we have now, and with the kind of chemicals that are now used within hair, sulfates are really not that necessary. I know within textured hair, they can have more of a drying effect. But, you know, I think there's a lot of negative around sulfates. Sulfates are not all bad. In some scenarios, you do need sulfates, especially if you have a high buildup in the hair. But new science breakthroughs have been able to produce products where sulfates are not necessary anymore, and you can still cleanse the hair with other ingredients in your shampoo that allow sulfates to be cleaned allows that hair to be cleaned well without the use of sulfates.
And so is that when people talk about sulfate free?
Yes. So you're more product, you'll find now in, and you know, I think this is where the geeky girl science comes out, because I just think sometimes we can hold on to things. And, you know, sulfates were good when we didn't have an alternative. Okay. We now have alternatives, so we don't need to use sulfates. Now, that doesn't mean that you will never, ever, ever use them again, because like I said, in some scenarios, sulfates can help you out. Do you know what I mean? If you've got heavy caked up buildup to some degree, the only thing that's going to push that out is a sulfate shampoo. However, is it something that you would commonly use in general hairdressing today? Not necessarily, because we have sulfate-free shampoos that can do those tasks in a generalized way.
Okay, there you go. So that's sulfate. So the next word I've got on my little list is silicones.
Silicones, I think, is one of those names that we hear when everybody gets up in arms and, you know, they say, oh, silicones damage your hair. Water-based silicones are not damaging to the hair at all. In fact, to be fair, it's probably more damaging to the environment than the hair. Not that that's okay, but the silicones are not going to damage your hair. In fact, silicones are very good for hair, especially curly hair, because our cuticles are risen in so many ways along that hair shaft. By having silicones in your products, it helps keep that moisture in the hair. So really, within textured hair, silicones are a good thing. They're not necessarily a bad thing. Now, it's the grading of silicones that you have, and this is where I get a little bit on my high horse, because it comes down to ingredients. And I just think, you know, it's one of these scenarios, you get what you pay for. If you're not paying or you're not working with products that have that integrity about their ingredients, then the type of silicone that you're actually putting in your hair is going to coat it rather than protect it. So it's really about understanding the manufacturer that you're working with and ensuring that the ingredients that have been used are suitable for what you want. But to say that silicones are a bad thing, no, they're not. In terms of curly hair, silicones are good.
Yeah, I think in my experience, I think before I knew what I know now, I was always kind of like told or taught or said that, you know, advised that silicones weren't ideal, and, you know, for all the reasons that, you know, are out there on the internet, you can do your own research. But I also feel for certain hair types, it does help create a certain level of shine,
absolutely,
smoothness, control.
Absolutely.
In some cases, it can also protect from the environments, you know, like humidity, things like that. So,
and I think also everything is about cause and effect, you know. You know, it's just like ingredients. We have this thing at the moment about ingredients being banned. And don't get me wrong, there are some ingredients that do need to be banned because they are harsh or they're not clean ingredients. However, to me, it's all about quantity and how it's been used. And sometimes you can, you know, again, I'll always go back to water. As you know, water is the widest used chemical in the world. But used in the wrong quantity, it can be very dangerous. Used in the right quantity, we use it every day and don't even think about it. So I just think sometimes we can't get so hung up on these things. We have to look at what that specific ingredient is being used in and why it's been used in that. And that's the whole thing about an ingredients list. When you look at the back of a bottle and you look at an ingredients list, the order in which those ingredients are placed on that list should give you and signify the importance of that ingredient on that specific product.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, no, and it's true, isn't it? So I was just going to say, in terms of, you know, somebody looking at an ingredients list, should they be panicked or worried if there is a silicone or something that looks like a silicone featured in that ingredient?
Well, again, depending on the type of silicone that's been used. Mm-hmm. I think the UK is really hot on ingredients. So to be honest with you, unless that product has been put into the market without going through the compliance regulations, your ingredients should be of a standard, because the British cosmetic regulations body in the UK is very, very strict. I think the issue we may have is because we're outside of the EU now, every European country has its own register of what they see as a fit ingredient or what they see as a bad ingredient. Doesn't necessarily mean the ingredient's bad, it just means that they've banned it out of their country. So without getting long-winded, I just think for me it's trying to work out, look at the product that you're using and then try and understand why that ingredient will be in there. What's it going to be in there to do? That to me is a better way at looking at ingredients, you know? You know, it's like people might say, you know, oh, it's got silicones in it. Okay, well, what type of ingredient is it? And what is the use purpose of it? Because if it's something that you're blow drying with, then clearly it's got silicones in there to do what? Protect the hair, to add shine to the hair, to make the hair easier.
Hair move.
Exactly. So it's about understanding why that ingredient is in there and the benefit of having it in there.
Yeah, I think this is why I just wanted to have this little chit chat about these things, because I think that there's so many camps out there depending on what's your kind of preference in terms of your hair care and your hair care routine. And I just think for the listeners, and the whole purpose of this podcast is about education.
Yeah,
so it's not even that we're having this conversation because these ingredients are in any of the products that we are talking about or that Avalon create. It's just more about demystifying and debunking and words,
taking the fear out of things. I just think that I think we fearmonger the consumer so much now, and we have, you know, these non, and I don't want, again, it's not about insulting anybody, but for me, you know, I sit here with the knowledge I have, but I'm not a scientist, you know, and very few of us are. So I just think sometimes, you know, when we're talking on things that we don't have that knowledge and understand and that level of understanding of, I just think it becomes quite dangerous, and you can cause fear where there doesn't need to be.
Yeah, I think that also, like, again, is another thing. It within the curly coily communities anyway, like, there is a lot of fear around the hair and its fragility or the damage that we can cause, or, and so I guess it's just about, you know, if you have a fear or a concern, do a little bit of research, do your due diligence, you know, and then figure it out, because somebody else's experience might not be your experience.
Absolutely. And that is it in a nutshell.
Okay, I have my My work here is done.
And then, that is it.
So moving on through the list, I've put alcohols and not the type that we can drink. The alcohols are the ingredients used in hair care products that can dissolve other ingredients, preserve formulas, or control product consistency. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk a little bit about alcohols?
I think that's another big one, and it's a big bowl of contention. And again, depending where you sit on the hair spectrum, alcohols will have a different impact of you. And there are different kinds of alcohols. You've got gentle alcohols, which tend to be used more so within your curly, coily hair. But then you have alcohols of a higher pH that are used within your straighter, wavy hair types. And there is a reason for that. You know, those, if you're looking at your more straight, wavy hair, the reason that those alcohols are going to be a little bit more high in pH is because you want to control moisture. You don't want so much moisture in hair. You want to reduce moisture. If you're coming down the spectrum where moisture is a big deal, you can't have alcohols that are going to restrict that moisture in the hair. So your alcohols are going to be a lot more gentler and more conditioning towards the hair. So it's really not villainizing alcohols, but understanding what products will have what kind of alcohols in it and the reason behind that.
Yeah, totally. And I just, for my own reference, made a note because I didn't want to get this wrong, and I wanted to give people a little opportunity to go away and do a little bit of research. But
go ahead.
We've got good alcohols and bad alcohols, right? So we have fatty alcohols like satyl, stearyl, and their kind of benefits are moisturizing, right?
Absolutely.
But then we'll have short chain alcohols like ethanol, isopropyl, and they can dry out and strip oils from the hair. So what you were saying, the reasons why.
So exactly. So neither one are bad. However, if you use the last set that you said on curly, coily hair, it's going to feel that hair is going to feel quite harsh. It's going to feel very dry because we don't have that natural level of moisturization in our hair. But if you're using it on type 1 hair where you have more sebum in that hair, that's the kind of alcohol you need to control that and to dry that sebum out so the hair is not feeling greasy or feeling heavy on the client's head. So both alcohols have their uses. It's just making sure that you're choosing the right one for your curl characteristic. Or your hair characteristic.
It's interesting because even though I know this, but having this conversation makes me think about one of my favorite products, which is mousse or foam.
Okay.
And when you think about straighter hair types, right, why do we use mousse? To create body and lift. So if you've got like a finer hair texture or a hair texture that doesn't need a lot of moisture in because it's going to weigh it down, then you need alcohol in there to make that product work, right?
You need that hold. You need that body. You need to push that body into the hair. Do you know what I mean? Or if, like you said, if you've got hair that has over sebaceous glands or over sebaceous sebum, I should say, then you want to control the amount of sebum that travels down that hair shaft.
And I also think, you know, just going back to mousse again, because again, that's a big fear, isn't it? People like when I put a kind of mousse out, they're scared because they're like, oh, not the alcohol.
Yeah.
Okay, so products have moved on.
Yeah.
Also, I think you get what you pay for in terms of product, right? So quality of ingredients, like you said before, the profile, the amount, the order of importance, but also like, now we've got foams as well. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, there's something out there. And a lot of the time, you know, if it's more like your type 3 hair, I guess, people are like, well, I never get no body. I can't get any lift. I can't get any volume. Uh-huh. But then you don't want to use a product that may contain a little bit of alcohol. And it's not an amount that's going to cause damage. It just exists.
And like
but over time, like anything, you use too much of it and you're not cleansing effectively, then yes, you may get a build-up point, it may cause you a problem. But
like you've just listed, you've got two kinds of alcohol. So depending, again, on your hair characteristic, you know, you can choose a product that's going to suffice. Because even, you know, if I think back to some, like my sister, you know, my sister's got very fine hair. And some products that probably would be pertaining to the category that her hair sits in, you would say, okay, use that. But actually, she needs something with an alcohol in that is just going to give her that lift and that body that she wants, you know? So I think sometimes we can't put hair in a box. That's my biggest thing. It's just about understanding products and knowing what product is going to work for the outcome that you want.
Totally. And the last little word I've got on my list is protein.
Oh, protein.
Anytime there's a majority of the time there's a conversation in that space or in the curly hair space, we get asked about protein.
Mm-hmm.
Clients will ask me about proteins.
Okay.
I actually, as a professional, are confused by protein.
Okay.
So do you just want to sort of talk to me a little bit about what proteins are and their role?
I mean, first, there are several proteins, to be honest with you, and it would take me this whole podcast to list them all. But I think in general, protein, you've got to remember, first and foremost, your hair's made of protein, which is keratin. That's what the hair is made of. And we mimic that keratin with things like hydrolyzed proteins. So you'll see hydrolyzed proteins on a lot of the bottles of different
things. So
like
silk, maybe in wheat.
Yeah.
Like that.
Wheat protein, yes. You might have silk proteins. You know, there are a variety of different proteins that are out there. However, the whole aspect of proteins is to strengthen the hair and build the hair up. Now, you can do this within styling products, because styling products have proteins in them. You can do this within conditioners. The problem is when you're conditioning hair, if you're not adding moisture, especially when we're talking about curl and coil, if you're not putting moisture with that protein, then what you end up starting to do is hardening the hair too much. And that's where sometimes breakage can occur, because your balance between protein and moisture is not right. Because the whole point of protein is to strengthen the hair. It's to push strength, push elasticity back into the hair. However, if you overdo that, that's when you start causing or start reversing that process with the hair. And in some cases, you may find, even sometimes when you're doing chemical treatments, that you build that barrier up on the hair where you can't do anything. Now, that is taking it from a generalized perspective. Now then, it comes back down to the types of different proteins that different people put in their products and whether that product is designed for your hair characteristic. And that's, again, where we have to look at, you know, when people want to talk about, oh, you can use this product across all hair types, there are very few products that you can do that with, because unless that has been taken into consideration in formulation, that's never going to be the case.
And even at that point there, again, it's like very obvious as you say it out loud, but you can't really formulate for all hair types across the curly spectrum, right? Mm. Like, it's just not possible. And also, as we know, hair can behave very different on different days. You might have different hair types on different, like, different heads of hair. So it's like, yeah, you can't just have a across the board protein treatment, right?
And that's why I think sometimes, you know, as much as, yes, we encourage, you know, I know, you know, sometimes when we talk about conditioning and we talk about, you know, home care and things like that, I think it's very important that clients have the right products to take home and maintain their hair at home. But I think it's even more so important that clients go to a stylist to have their hair analysed correctly, so that you're keeping an eye on that. Because sometimes you can be at home using protein, and you're causing such a build-up on your hair that actually by the time you come into the salon to do something, that damage has already occurred.
I was literally just going to ask you if hair can have too much protein.
Yeah. It can.
Amazing. I mean, yeah, there you go. So we kind of just wanted to really break down and demystify some of those words. Because, I mean, even for me, you know, like, you're always learning. And like I said, I'm always perplexed still by the whole protein thing. But I think I've got it now. So the next thing I wanted to kind of move on to was, again, with Jackie being a trichologist, is scalp care. Mm. So, Jackie, why is scalp care so important? Because sometimes I feel like it's overlooked. And what should people really know about scalp disorders and how they can impact hair health?
I think scalp care is huge. And I think it's a very big category. I think sometimes the importance of scalp care, as you say, is very much misunderstood. And I think often we just focus on hair care. And there is a real difference between caring for the hair and caring for the scalp. And, you know, disorders of the scalp are something that is present on everybody's scalp. It's just that sometimes, you know, depending on circumstances, you know, you see people with dandruff, you see people with itchy, dry scalps, and that's because that has been acerbated and you can now feel it. But we all have dandruff dormant on the scalp. It's just for some people, it is, you know, comes to the forefront. So I just think understanding the importance of cleansing your scalp is important. Understanding the importance of choosing the right products to cleanse your scalp with is important. Recognizing when something untoward is happening on your scalp is important. And this is why, you know, I can't reinforce enough why it's important to see a professional, even if you love doing your hair yourself. And even, you know, as a professional hairdresser, that's something that I've had to take into consideration and recognize. Not everybody wants to go to a salon to do their hair. And that's not because they don't appreciate a professional looking at their hair. It's just not what they want to do. They enjoy doing their hair themselves. And it took me speaking to someone on a model casting to get that. You know, we were casting a model, and I was talking to her, so what stylist do you go to and what salon do you go to? And she went, I do my hair myself. And I was like, why? And she actually looked at me and said, because I actually like doing my hair. And I'd never ever considered that, as stupid as it sounds.
Yeah.
And so for me, it made me recognise and understand that, you know what, not everybody wants to go to a professional to do their hair. Some people love to maintain their hair themselves. So it's really about giving people the information to understand how to do that properly. Now, and whilst you are maintaining your hair yourself, you're at home, you're shampooing, you're conditioning, and you're doing whatever, if something untowards on your scalp occurs, you're never going to see that and you're never going to recognise that. And that's why it's important to go to a salon from time, even if it's once a year, even if it's twice a year, to just to get your hair and scalp analysed, you know. Or even if you don't want to go to a salon, go to a trichologist, go to a hair and scalp specialist, so that they can, the same way you go to a dentist to get your teeth checked out twice a year and to make sure they're cleaned properly and things like that, go and see a trichologist for that. I think, unfortunately, when scalp disorders occur, by the time someone goes to a professional, such as a trichologist, it's too late. And whereas if you had that relationship where you were getting your scalp checked regularly, those things would be minimised. So in terms of scalp disorders, you've got seborrheic dandruff, which is a greasy dandruff. That's a common. Most dandruff, itchy dandruff, especially on your tighter curls and your curl patterns. And that's really a mixture of natural sebum, natural oils not coming up on the scalp. And once that happens, the skin of the scalp starts to get tight. When the skin gets tight, what do? We start scratching our scalp. You know, our fingernails contain so much bacteria. I mean, folliculitis is so huge in textured hair, and not because of anything more than we scratch our hair quite a lot. And we neglect to understand how much bacteria sits under our nails, and if you scratch that skin and it becomes infected, then you have a problem. Fungus of the scalp. You know, often we see so much online about people going to bed with their hair wet, you know, even if they've got braids in, or if they've got wigs or plaits on, and they're shampooing their hair, not drying it properly and going to bed with it damp, that can cause fungus of the scalp, all of those kind of things. So it's important to really make sure that your scalp care is kept up to date. Types of shampoos that we use. You know, when you're shampooing, yes, you're cleaning the hair, but you're also cleaning the scalp. And it's really about making sure that your shampoo choice accommodates those two things. And sometimes those two things can get lost. I cringe when someone says to me, they just pick a shampoo off the shelf. I cringe.
Or they use what's there.
I'll just use what's there. Or I use my boyfriend's shampoo. Honestly, it makes my heart sink. Because, yeah, the formula behind them, they're all detergents. But past that element of it, there are other key ingredients that are added to suffice and ensure your scalp care. And it's things like that that I think sometimes we omit. And not to jump on, not to just keep jumping on about it, but I think in education, the art of shampooing is lost. We don't teach shampooing as a serious subject matter. It's just something you do in order to style the hair, cut the hair, or whatever else you're going to be doing to the hair, when actually the shampooing is the most important aspect of that service. So for me, shampooing is a big deal.
Yeah, and I think just something you said there about the choice, right? And it makes me think of the skinification, you know, within skincare.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of almost like speak to or diagnose different types of skincare. So like your skin is oily mm-hmm. or dry or whatever. Mm-hmm. And similar with the scalp, right?
Absolutely.
You're not going to need the same shampoo all the time.
Not necessarily. And I think, again, depending on your styling game, you know, mm-hmm. if you're somebody that uses a lot of products in your hair, nothing wrong with that. But you need to make sure that your hair and scalp is cleansed correctly to accommodate those things. You know, you can't be putting on 10 different kind of products on your hair and then not cleanse correctly or not condition correctly. And I think we live in an era where people want to do so many different things with their hair, which is fine, but you have to make sure that your hair and scalp care is up to speed, and you have to make sure that you're using the right kind of products to support that.
Definitely. And just in some more severe cases, if like a scalp condition goes untreated, I mean, what can happen? Will it affect hair growth?
It absolutely will. If you can do, if the follicles become decongested, then obviously your new hair can't come up, so it will impact on your growth. If your follicle becomes so decongested that you're scratching to such a degree, you're actually going to be causing breakage within the hair, and that's hair loss can occur from that. You know, some people don't realize that you can actually lose hair from dandruff, you know, because it, especially itchy dandruff, because if you're scratching and scratching to such a degree, you're actually tearing the hair from the follicle. So, you know, it's a big deal in terms of hair and scalp condition.
Yeah, I mean, I had a situation the other day actually where I was profusely scratching, and I didn't know what was wrong, but you know, I reached for my dried itchy Avalon and it was gone within 2 days. But that's not because I work with the brand, it was just that I knew the product worked, you know.
But I think as well, you know, it's even for scalp, I think we talk about putting on products and different things that can actually cause scalp disorders, but even things that you take in can also affect your scalp. You know, I never knew that things like even aspirin, you know, can cause scalp irritation. And, you know, even medication that we take, you know, if we've got clients that are diabetic, clients that are on high blood pressure tablets, all of those things can cause the scalp to behave differently because they have an after effect on the skin, and they have an after, you know, your scalp is part of your skin. And because you've got your blood supply to the scalp area, you know, there are things that can interfere with that flow coming to the follicle area, which then reduces your growth. So, you know, understanding these things, again, going back to choice of shampoo, frequency of shampoo, that's another big one, especially in the category of type 3 and 4 hair, is, you know, we have this myth about how frequently you should shampoo your hair. Personally, I think it's down to the products that you use, because they will dictate how that happens. And that to me is all about pH, because you've got to be able to regulate that to be able to have that frequency.
You're getting ahead of me now.
Oh,
that,
am I?
That was my, no, 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 it's good. It's good. It leads nicely into the next part, which is, again, things that we hear. So like pH balancing was one, and then neutralizing and normalizing. So if we go with pH balancing, do you just want to talk a little bit about that and its role within hair and hair care?
Working for me, I was always taught as a hairdresser, if you understand pH, you will reduce the amount of damage you do to clients' hair. And we all are taught, even in school, that when we're looking at your pH scale, you have 0 to 14. Yeah. We know that water sits at a pH of 7, which is neutral. So, which is why we can consume water and drink water and nothing happens to us. And then we know that once we move past a pH of 7, we start moving into alkaline. When we move past the pH of 7 going down the other way, we start moving into the acids. Now, alkaline will open up the cuticles, acid will close down the cuticles. When we are talking about pH of like balancing the scalp, there are a number of ways that as professionals we need to understand what we're doing. So let's start with the chemical side of things. I'll start with relaxers, the most harshest of all chemicals because it sits at a pH of 13. Now, we know that once the hair comes into contact with the relaxer, and we say we're relaxing, we have to control that pH. Now, for us as a brand, there are steps we use within our process to ensure that we are monitoring that pH throughout the process, to the fact that once we've finished that process and we've rinsed, we can ensure that we've brought that pH right back down to near normal. Yeah. So straight away, we already know that we're leaving that client with their hair and their scalp with integrity. When we're talking about perms, because, you know, there's also that in perms. Perms sit at a pH of around, depending on the manufacturer, could sit between 9 and 10, depending on what you're using. Now, I know perms are not a popular thing in the marketplace, but again, you're elevating pH, so you need to bring pH back down. For us as a brand, we train that when you're conditioning, there are three ways you can condition hair. You can condition hair with heat, you can condition hair by time, and you condition hair by elevated pH. So one of the breakthroughs for Avlon was, you know, when we did relaxing, and this is where the science really came in, what Dr. Saeed educated us on is actually once the hair is at elevated pH, because everything is open, that is the best time to deposit conditioner. So hence when we're doing our relaxing process, it does sound like I'm banging on about relaxers, but I just want people to understand.
Yeah, it's important.
You know, when we are conditioned, that's the best time to condition, once the hair is at elevated pH. Once we've convinced that condition, we close everything back down by normalizing the hair and bringing the pH back further. Now, that same methodology sits across every time we are using chemicals. So whether it's a relaxer, whether it's a tint, whether it's bleach, anytime you're elevating pH, the best time to condition is once that hair is all open, because the conditioner can go in with ease. And if you think about things like our bond treatment, hence why you put the bond in the tint or you put the bond in your bleach, because it's allowing it to go in and it's allowing it to travel with ease to exactly where it needs to go and repair. And that's just a simplified way of talking about it.
Yeah, it just gives people a bit of a visual if you understand hair and, and chemical processes. But for the listener at home, what is the importance of like balancing the pH of the scalp?
So I'm just coming down to shampoo. So I'm talking it from a chemical perspective. Yeah. Now, when we're talking about shampooing and conditioning, we already know, or just in case we don't know, when you're looking at, let's look, and I'm just going to use the classification just for this period, just so that it makes sense. When you look at type 1 hair, type 1 hair will have more oils to the scalp than your type 4 hair. We already know that curly hair is a lot drier. It doesn't have as much moisture. Our natural oils do not travel down the hair shaft. Hence why moisturization and hydration is a big thing for that category. So when we're shampooing, if we're using shampoos that are high in pH, we're actually exacerbating that dryness when you're working with curls and coils. Yeah. Whereas when you're working with type 1 hair, you want to control that moisture in the hair. You want to control that sebum in the hair. So working with a higher pH shampoo sits better there. But when you're working with curly hair, we don't want that. We want to maintain moisture. We want to keep that balance. So in terms of pH, our shampoos always sit between 4.5 and 5.5. And that's the natural pH of the hair and skin anyway, which is 4.5 and 5.5. You will never find a shampoo within the Avlon portfolio that sits above 5.5 unless it's a normalizing shampoo. And again, that sits at a pH of 6. So that's just to show you the steps we take to make sure that your scalp is balanced as well as your hair being balanced.
Come with the facts. I think that was kind of what I wanted you to touch on, is because I think working with Avlon for the couple of years I've worked with Avlon now, like, just the kind of having the pH on the bottle and on the tubs has been a game changer for me, because I understand now what I'm doing and why I'm doing it and when I need to use it. So it's really, really important.
And the reason for that is because, again, we've always known that when you work with curls and coils, when you work with hair across the board, the scalp, the skin of the scalp is important, but specifically in this category, it's very important. And to be fair, even at your type 1 and 2, you know, I always say when you're looking, if that hair is in its natural format, then your higher pH shampoos and conditioners, fine. Once you start using chemicals, once you start using high level tints and bleaches, you're then compromising the condition of that hair. You're compromising the oils in that hair. And you actually may then have to look at the shampoos and conditioners that you're using across. And often when we speak to stylists that use our products, they always say, you know, oh my God, for my chemical clients, your product sits so perfect because the hair feels so amazing. And it's because we can sometimes run away with the conclusion that, you know, straight hair or wavy hair doesn't need treatment shampoos and treatment conditioners, and actually they do, or that straight hair, curly hair scalps don't need to be maintained at a pH level, and actually yes they do. It may not be to the same level as your 3 and 4s, but it actually does need to be regulated in the same way. So, you know, ensuring that the scalp pH and the hair pH is maintained is very important when you're treating the hair and scalp.
And I guess it just speaks to Avalon being the science of hair care, right? But it also makes me think about as well, when you're mentioning like straighter hair clients that often suffer with greasier hair. Are we using the right, are we using an alkaline shampoo? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's
and the
about
thing is,
thought.
Sometimes we are using alkaline shampoos, and this is the biggest thing about greasy hair clients. I think sometimes, or traditionally, I would say, the kind of shampoos that are produced to regulate that are so harsh that you actually reduce the moisture too much. And, you know, and you hear that with, you know, we work with clients from all hair types. And one of my biggest indicators is when I'm talking to a Caucasian clients or clients with straight hair, and they start saying, oh, I hate using my shampoo because it makes my scalp feel tight. That to me is the biggest indicator of high pH shampoo. Because your scalp shouldn't be feeling tight.
No, definitely. And then another thing that you mentioned, but can you just kind of like clarify that? There's words that I hear a lot, neutralizing, but also normalizing. Do you just want to kind of tell us the difference?
Right. Terminology that I trained with, neutralizing is when you're locking something into position. So neutralizing is a term that we use when we're perming, because when you're perming, you're creating a new curl and you're locking that curl into position with a neutralizing formula or foam or liquid that knocks and locks that perm and forms that new curl. Normalizing is when you're bringing the pH of the hair back down to normal. So with your relaxers, you will use what we call a normalizing shampoo. And the whole purpose of that shampoo is to reduce any alkaline oils that may still be left in the hair and bring the hair back down to normal pH.
And I just wanted to touch on that, because for those that are listening, that is language and that may exist within Avalon because of some of the chemical processes that are available. But then there are words like neutralizing that you hear related in to toning when you're a colorist. So it's just kind of like trying to differentiate. For sure. And then, I mean, we've kind of touched on it before, but I think it's a good time to touch on it again. Like, but not what is heat damage. I just want to know what heat protection is.
Heat, again, it depends on in what category we're talking about. I think, you know, when people often say that curly, coily hair is fragile, and it is fragile. We know it's fragile. However, even within that fragility, it is unique with what you can do with that curl pattern or that curl type. So it's really about understanding how to get the best from that hair while protecting the hair. And, you know, we stay at a stance where it's always about protection. So, you know, your first point of protection is your shampoo and your conditioning. Once you've done that, then it's okay, what is the next step? It's your leave-in conditioners, because your leave-in conditioners are your primer. That's getting the hair ready for the next steps. Then after you've done your leave-in conditioners, it's about your styling aid now. So how am I going to style that hair? If heat is going to be used in abundance, then you've got to look at the type of heat stylers that you're going to use. And it may be a combination of one or two, depending on the hair that you're working with. Because we already know that when you're working within this category, fragility is a big one. Lack of elasticity is a big one. Porosity is a big one. So to make sure that you realign all of those things, it may be a case of using one product like a Silk and Seal that is going to give you all of those options under one house, depending on that care and the condition of it. Or it may be a combination of using a Silk and Seal and a foam wrap to give you that combination. So it's really about thinking of the hair, of the finish, and what you're going to do. So let's say, for instance, I'm doing a wrap style. You would shampoo, you do your leave-in conditioner, you'd use your foam wrap, and that's going to be your setting agent, but it's also going to be a part of your protection for that hair. And you're going to put your Silk and Seal on top of that, because the silicones in that are going to be for your shine, and to even add more shine than your foam alone is going to give you. But also what it's going to do is, once that hair is dry, it's going to be added protection for the heat of your straighteners. So if you just think about what I've just said, the whole process from shampooing to conditioning to styling to finish, you're protecting the hair in every step of the way to ensure that whatever you're doing to the hair, whatever you may take out of the hair, you're replenishing it back into the hair. And that's the thing I think that people omit when it comes to working with curly and coily hair. you're doing processes, but you're not thinking about what you're taking out of the hair whilst you're doing those processes. One thing I think we do as a manufacturer is give you the tools and the products that you need to push back into the hair everything you're taking out the hair along that service journey. Yeah, so yes, you've shampooed, now you've rinsed, the hair's open to the atmosphere. We already know our cuticles are open, so moisture is going to trap, is going to leave. So what do we put on? We put on our primer. Our primer's there to lock that conditioning moisture and also prep the hair for your next stage. Then you go with your foam wrap, that's your setting agent, that's going to lock your style into place, and it's also going to prepare the hair for the next stage. Then you're going in with your silk and seal, that's your protection for your heat on top. So you're always thinking about the next stage and protecting the hair throughout that.
And all of those products that you're mentioning are super moisturizing, right? And I think that's one thing
all
I've learned.
They're all going to lock your hydration in, but it's not overly going to do it. You're still going to be able to feel the hair. The hair's not going to feel drowned. But you, what you're doing, the way I like to put it, is you're locking in moisture at every step. So wherever you're going to lose it, you're replenishing it.
We've spoken again briefly about it, but you know, another word we hear a lot kind of banded around in curly and coily hair care and the communities is damage. And I think we've had conversations about this, Jackie, before. And what do we mean by damage? I mean, we'll keep this one short. We don't have to go into...
I think, and this is just me, I think people get caught up on the word damage too much. Mm-hmm. I think, but then I'm going to contradict myself, because I think I've learned over the years that sometimes when you tell a client that the hair is damaged, they can be quite insulted by that. And it's one of those things. I put myself in the mind of when a doctor is telling you something about yourself or your body that you don't necessarily want to hear, and if it's not delivered in a way that is palatable to you, it can be offensive. So I tend to not say the word damage, I say compromise, because everyone's hair is compromised to a certain degree. I think as hairdressers, we damage hair all day long. I think the difference is how you control that damage, because damage can occur in hair anyhow, whether you've got chemicals in it, anything in it. You know, it's fragile. It's a material. You know, you could have an actual put a wrap on your hair. It's good. You know, to some degree, there is some damage there. So for me, it's really about understanding. I don't think I've actually got this, but understanding what damage. So what is damage? Damage is where you really have taken the hair to such a level that there's no coming back from it. You know, no amount of conditioner is going to repair it. No amount of treatments are going to, that hair needs to cut, because you've now reduced the bonds in the hair to such a degree that even if you just pull that, it's just coming off in your hand. That's damaged hair to me. It is beyond repair.
I mean, it always interests me, is because it's a word. But I think, you know, one of the other things we spoke about is the stuff that people don't see as damage. But, you know, using the wrong brush or...
It can damage your hair. Brushing your hair wet can damage your hair.
You know, when your hair's wet, right, it's in a more fragile state. Yeah. So it's just like, it was just kind of getting a bit clarity
but I think,
around that word,
I just think we need to change our language. I think, you know, for me, I just find that when you talk about compromisation of hair, people tend to be a little bit more open. When you say damage, people tend to shut down, because they think, oh, all hairdressers tell me that my hair is damaged. And you just think, well, no, okay, let's approach it a different way. Let's look at where your hair is now and let's show you. And I think the fact that a lot of salons now use microscopes to show clients their hair, I think that's a game changer, because I think sometimes clients don't believe you. But when they can see what their scalp looks like and what their hair looks like under a microscope, it kind of opens their eyes and gives them a better understanding of what you're talking about. So I just think it's really about using visuals to make people understand what you mean when you mean that, when you're talking about damage.
I think, I just think, just kind of wrap that one up. I think damage is going to always exist, right?
Of course.
It's a natural fiber.
I beg to differ.
No?
I think... For me, to be honest with you, it's a hard one, because yes, I know there are people that, you know, you see people with damage, but I think if you're using the right products, you reduce that considerably.
No, I just meant in terms of, you know, like I think we've spoke about omitting it, but cause and effect, but like, I guess day to day, we sustain little bits of damage, don't we? Whether of it's course. UV or whatever it is. So like even catching your hair in a comb the wrong way or in a zipper, you can break, you know what I mean? So it's just like, it's like just your fingernails, the severity, isn't it?
I guess it's like your fingernails, isn't it? You know, you can grow your nails and then you do something and you chip it and whatever not. But if you don't file it down, if you don't put your hardener back on it, then that chip is going to continue. So for me, it's the same with your hair. Yes, you can be doing things that are going to damage your hair, but everything's about cause and effect, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And it's really about making sure that you are protecting your hair, regardless of what your chosen style or your chosen methodology of hair care is. It's just really making sure that you protect your hair.
Amazing. Totally. And so, like, obviously we've had product focus throughout the season. What would be your sort of hero product for someone that's suffering with a scalp issue or...
If
somebody came to you and said, Jackie, my head is really, really itching me right now and I just don't know what's wrong, what would be your first point of call?
My first point of call would be, in terms of product, would be, depending on the severity of it, I would either go with a Firm Care anti-dandruff shampoo collection, or if it was something a little bit more disconcerting and something that needed attention straight away, I'd go with Arcara Care Dry and Itchy. The reason being is that the way I look at those two products is, if it's something that is an irritant and a cause of concern, but it's not heightened, you know, we can take time to ease it out, a Firm Care is going to do it. It's going to do it in a more holistic way. If it's something that needs attention, that it's severe and it needs to be controlled right now, Dry and Itchy is going to do that in a more direct way.
I mean, I'm actually an As I Am fan. I actually use the As I Am Dry and
Itchy.
Not because they're better than any other. I just use it as my kind of regular shampoo because I do sometimes suffer a bit of a flaky scalp, but I just quite like it as a shampoo and conditioner.
And again, I think the As I Am collection in terms for natural hair is amazing. I mean, all of them can be used across natural hair, but what I love about the As I Am, which I think gives it the game changer in terms of a Dry and Itchy range, is the co-wash. There is not another, to my knowledge, natural hair product that has a co-wash for dry and itchy scalp as I Am has. And I just think that in itself is just a game changer because...
And just to touch on that, because I missed it out, and if you would just quickly circle back, like co-washing, because we've talked about how important it is to cleanse the scalp, just briefly touch on what co-washing is.
So your co-wash is the original term is a shampoo and conditioning based cleansing agent. So it will have a higher proportion of conditioning agents to shampooing agents. So it's a more gentler and effective way to cleanse the hair. That's what the original co-washes was. In fact, Vidal Sassoon in the UK was the first one to bring out a co-wash, believe it or not. It was called a two-in-one. Yeah. They've become far more sophisticated now and far more effective in the hair now. And we have co-washes across the board that you can co-wash and still maintain hydration in the hair, but also have effective cleansing. Before, the cleansing action of co-washes wasn't that brilliant because I suppose the thought process was to have it more conditioning and less aggression from the shampooing agents in there, whereas now, especially in this category, we have co-washes that are gentle, i.e. sit within that pH focus, but also have functional and active ingredients to help stimulate and cleanse the scalp at the same time. So the As I Am range sits perfectly within that co-wash category, and like I said, you know, reinforcing that Dry and Itchy co-wash, that to me is a game changer within the scalp care sector, because it is the only one that I know to be out there that people can use in between their deep cleanse.
Yeah, so check out As I Am.
As
but
I
you
am,
know what,
baby.
Jackie, thank you so much. I mean, I know that I kind of put the heat on you a little bit today, but
just a little bit.
But I just know you've got the answers, and I think it's just really nice to be able to have this conversation. And again, it's all about education. It's all about just sharing knowledge so people can make informed choices. And, you know, also, again, just reinforcing the science a bit, especially when it comes to Avlon, you know, and their products and their formulations. So I hope, listeners, that this has empowered you to make informed decisions for you and your curly, coily hair. And for our listeners, don't forget to follow the podcast. Share this episode with your friends, your family, your stylist, and anyone else passionate about texture.
Share, share, share.
Share it all. And also engage with us on social media, because we love a chat.
Thank you. And if you want any more information on scalp care, hit us up and let us know.
Yeah, Jackie, what is your social, or do you not want people to know that?
I don't mind. My name is Jackie McIntosh. You'll find me on Instagram. That's about my only social media outlet at the minute. I do have a TikTok, but I'm really bad. I don't look at it, but you can reach me on TikTok too.
Amazing. So yeah, thanks again.
Thank you.